It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, October the 12th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And don't forget to go to the new and improved website for all Talking Mets interactions, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. And I want to thank the good folks who now support the show, the good folks over at the Believe Network. Welcome. This is actually our first Believe Network show. Welcome into those good people over there, new partnership. If you don't know what I'm talking about, I put a little 10-minute or so announcement on Friday. Really excited to be part of a new chapter in the Talking Mets podcast. We have a lot to talk about today. What kind of owner does Steve Cohen want to be? Came to mind this week. I saw some comments. I've seen some comments over the last month. We're 5 years in to Cohen's ownership. What kind of owner will Steve Cohen be? Pete Alonso wants 7 years. The negotiations through the media with Boris and Pete have started. People are freaking out. Let's just calm down over there. We're going to start to look at the roster. And this is getting much more complicated than any other point in the last couple of years as the Mets have kids to work into the big league roster, potentially somewhat high ceiling. They have pitching needs. They want to play better defense. They've got some immovable contracts. They've got some guys on the roster that have been what I would call a tease. How does David Stearns figure this out? It's complicated. On the offensive side, we're going to start to piece it together because, well, let's face it, Pete Alonso's probably the big start of the offseason. And we haven't even gotten to the pitching and the bullpen and Edwin Diaz and the starting rotation. And based on what you saw so far in the postseason, whether it be Detroit, Seattle, Milwaukee last night in their decisive Game 5 win, Chicago, even to a certain degree, I know the Yankees struggled against the Blue Jays with pitching. They won it on pitching against the Red Sox. Pitching is the name of the game. We always know that. And, you know, good pitching typically finds a way to get outs. Bad pitching doesn't. Run prevention be damned. We'll talk more about that. A lot to get to here on this latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. We haven't even hit the hot stove yet. The offseason has begun for the last couple of weeks here for the Mets as the rest of the league, and now we're into the championship series. And before you know it, it'll be over. There'll be a new champion, and the phase of building the team and all the things we do throughout the offseason will be in full force. But we're setting it up a little bit early. Last year, if you remember, it was almost like the Mets lost to the Dodgers. They had this great run. We had maybe like 5 hours of sleep, and we were back at it, and away you go. Not the position you want to be in, but at least we have some time now to prepare. So anyway, let's kick this thing off before we get deep into the weeds with Alonso, the contract, you know, all the stuff that's been talked about regarding the offense and run prevention and all that stuff. So we're 5 years into this Cohen ownership. I think we have a good feel of who Steve Cohen is. He made some comments when he came on board that he'd be disappointed if he didn't have a World Series within 5 years. I never liked those comments because winning a World Series is hard. I think that Cohen had some naivety coming in, naivety about how the sport works, how much the league hates him, how much he's an outsider coming into a good old boys network, how he is a transformative figure because of how he looks at the team, and how much money he has and how much money he can lose. And then long term, you look at what could be almost a Death Star scenario in a non-salary cap league. If he gets this casino and he gets this whole situation around the ballpark, and I think there's a lot of, and I don't want to get into the politics of it because I know some people hate the casino situation. I'm not a big fan of going to a casino. I like to gamble once in a while, but no good comes from putting money down that you have a 99% chance of losing. But I think the area around Citi Field is a eyesore. It's a missed opportunity. Fans who go to other ballparks say all the time it'd be a great area if you could keep people coming and have them stay after the ball game, or even go when there's not a ball game or there's another event. You know, it's basically an area, and it's better with Citi Field providing some amenities, but during the days of Shea Stadium, you literally went to Shea Stadium, watched the ball game, and got out. And you probably were best served going right before the ball game and leave right after, because there wasn't that many great amenities at Shea Stadium to begin with. It was about the baseball, which we all grew up and we all appreciate, but the world has changed a lot. Now, the politics of the city and money and all the other things that come into play that are going to go into a very complicated project, that's a lot up in the air. But in the long run, you got to think that Cohen's going to do something here. So you have an owner that is not going to have an issue with cash flow. And I know everybody thinks because you own a baseball team, you make all this money. And maybe if you bought it in the 70s and you bought it for, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars and then you sold it for $3 billion, that's a great return on investment. I'm not sure the ROI on sports teams 30 years from now or 20 years from now is going to be the same when you're talking about purchasing teams with $3, $4, $5, $6 billion. As it has been to date. I think we might have been in the golden age of that. I don't know enough. That's just an opinion. It's opinion based on some basic knowledge of how the sports work from a business side. And, you know, ultimately, the team is for something bigger. And I think with Cohen, he sees the team as a public trust. He's not going to lose endless money, but he's willing to invest in it. He's been very blessed. He's been very, you know, he earned it in the kind of lifestyle he's built for himself, the kind of money he's earned in investments. I know that there's been some dark clouds over some of that, but putting that aside, here's a guy that sees at this point in his life where this team, because he sees it with his family, gives so many people joy, and he would like that joy to be continuous. And that means he'll invest in the team. And that's a beautiful thing. And you hear everything from every player that spends a few minutes there about how the organization treats them. More importantly, how the organization treats their family. Remember, these are human beings. Steve's wife, Alex Cohen, I think is a huge part of that. I think people underestimate how much say she has and how much influence she has, even when these free agents are being courted. I think she deserves a ton of credit. And, I mean, this is a very, very powerful tandem. And the fact that you have an executive that is young, that has been able to be successful in a small market, a pretty difficult owner, grew up a Mets fan. Think about that. You have the makings of a really great era of Mets baseball. I mean, this could not have been scripted better. I mean, the guy 15 years ago, before he became, he was an intern in baseball, but before he got into the front office in Houston, I mean, this is a guy that was probably online like you and I reading about the Mets. I mean, I'm pretty sure that was what he was doing. I've heard stories about it. So you have yourself a dream owner. You have yourself a dream executive. And, you know, the players and the coaches and all the other parts of this, those are the ones that might be fungible in and out, but I think you got yourself a good situation. Now, the thing that Sandy Alderson, and I've said this a lot, he always said when he took over and subbed in post Brody Van Wagenen and talked about Cohen and talked about the largesse and the resources, that when you have all these resources, when you have all these choices, things become more complicated. It's almost a, you know, blessing and a curse. Now, nobody's going to want to go back to what the uncertainty of the Wilpon years was. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants to be under the budgets of a Tampa Bay Rays or a Pittsburgh Pirates. No one's going to say, hey, I'll trade off for that. But it does come with its own burdens. And I think part of that burden is expectations, and part of that is how the media views you. It's the temptation of winning off seasons. It's the temptation of collecting toys. And I think Cohen has been pretty good, whether it be early on with Alderson, Zach Scott, Jared Porter, Billy Epler, and with David Stearns, to pretty much being involved, providing resources. But it sounds like he tells his executives, hey, this is your thing. You know, I'm here to be involved. I'm here to understand it. I'm obviously going to be overseeing this investment. But he has a pretty big day job that he's still involved with. He's not going to be scouring the waiver wire at 2 o'clock in the morning to see what, you know, reliever that's underused is going to be a good option. That's what he's paying people for. And to a certain degree, Stearns has to delegate a lot of stuff, too. He's the president of baseball operations, for crying out loud. And you're trusting him. But there's a few things that have been floated out there. And you know what? Sometimes when it comes to the media business now, there's so much clickbait. There's so much stuff that you put out there to generate discussion because it's a business model. And it's, and I always say, the one thing you have to always remember at this time of the year is educated speculation. And there are beat writers in this town that are very good at it, educated speculation. The New York Post, just read a lot of their articles, a lot of educated speculation. Sure, Heyman has a pretty clued in insider line to certain agents. Take that more seriously. But it's a game, man. And the problem now is that you as an end user, you as a reader, have to really parse through it and put effort and time in a way that you don't want to. So if you hear, well, you know, Rocco Baldelli would be a nice option, and perhaps he's an option for the Mets as a bench coach, that's educated speculation. And if you run and say, oh, well, that's a great, now that's going to be the Mets bench coach, and he's going to take over for Mendoza if they get off to a bad start. Well, calm down. That's not, if you read that article, it's educated speculation. It makes sense. It'd be a nice play. And will the front office put a bench coach in that potentially is a hedge to Mendoza, who's doesn't have a contract after next year? I get that, but let's not run with that. And that's a small example. You know, there'll be plenty of examples of players to trade or players to acquire or fictitious trades. Like, let's not get crazy. But the thing that continues to get thrown out there, especially over the last couple of months, is how Cohen has certain players of the apple of his eye. Kyle Schwarber's name has come up. How Cohen's very pissed off after what happened. And, you know, you hear a lot of Stearns is on the hot seat, Mendoza's on the hot seat type of deal. And I'm not saying those aren't true because, look, when you spend $340, $350 million on a team to win 83 games and struggle to find pitching for the better part of the season and have to rely on three kids, two of which probably should not have been making big league starts in significant games in September, I can understand being a little pissed off at David Stearns. I can understand being pissed off at the manager for how things went. But that, you know, the real thing that this town looks back on, especially the writers, people that are my age or more, they look back at George Steinbrenner and the drama and the soap opera that went into hiding when he was suspended for a couple of years. When he came back out, his power was there, but he had a good firewall in Gene Michael. And as they were winning in the late 90s, guys like Michael and Torrey and that team held him at bay. He never changed as an owner. Okay, he always wanted, I mean, there's so many examples. You want to read books. Joel Sherman's written a book. Andy Martino recently wrote a book where players like Albert Bell, instead of keeping Bernie Williams, trading Mariano Rivera, you know, Derek Jeter, you know, potentially struggling, and who knows how that would have went. And then if you go back to the 80s, how George would go out and get Jack Clark. George would go out and sign a B-minus pitcher and put him into the rotation, and they would flop. Andy Hawkins, Rick Rodin. You know, good pitchers, but, you know, maybe they were expecting them, especially in a time when the Mets were being successful, to be Doc Gooden, to be Ron Darling, and they really weren't in a lot of ways. And if you look at those late 80s and Yankees teams, they weren't bad teams. In a wild card era, they make the postseason. They had incredibly good offenses. But George was impulsive, and it always was a new toy. And when I heard he's like, you know, Schwarber's the apple of Cohen's eye, I'm like, I'm not against Kyle Schwarber as much as I was a few years ago when he was potentially an option after 2022. But I also know Kyle Schwarber is the exact kind of move that makes headlines in December, and I'm not sure how that's going to play the following October, and I'm not sure how that's going to play over the long haul. And we have no idea how the league is going to be after 2026 with a lockout. We have no idea the kind of new rules there'll be, because there is a group of owners, and maybe Hal Steinbrenner is part of it, that want to start to make this a parity league like the NBA, like the NFL. And part of that is for cost certainty. I don't know if there's a lot of owners out there outside of maybe John Middleton down in Philadelphia, Cohen, that have the appetite to play Steinbrenner ball. The Dodgers obviously do. The Dodgers are a decade ahead of these teams. They have an equity group, and they've also brought in Andrew Friedman, who's done an incredibly good job with the resources to create a pipeline of value players that turn into more than that. Think Max Muncy. They, you know, everything that they have built up since that Guggenheim group came in, you're starting to see the fruition of it. They were vulnerable all season, but I said, hey, and I said this before they beat the Phillies, before anything, they did anything in the postseason. Don't underestimate a champion until you knock them out. They're going to be tough, and they're going to be tough. And Milwaukee has this magic carpet ride. You know, Bob Uecker, maybe they're smarting from the Pete Alonso home run still last year, but, you know, nobody really has that appetite. And I don't know how much longer the Dodgers will. They have all these deferred contracts. Eventually, that bill will come home due. So, in some ways, you worry that Cohen is going to lose patience, that the calls for change, sometimes which are just change for change's sake, he'll be swayed by. You know, how swayed is he by the media? Remember, this is a guy that was having Christmas vacation in Hawaii. He got a call while he's having margaritas on the beach somewhere in a high-end resort and worked out a deal for Carlos Correa in the middle of the night. Now, they actually dodged a bullet there, for lack of a better word. I'm not so sure, and I said that at the time. It was a fun night. I remember waking up and how much fun we had with radio there, and I supported that move because I thought the Mets needed another bat and they needed to leverage what they had in 2022. But if you think about it, those are the exact kind of moves, the kind of behaviors that got the Yankees in trouble in the 80s. And the Mets dodged a bullet. The Mets dodged a big bullet. I mean, the Mets dodged a bullet, and again, another player I advocated for to team up with DeGrom was Trevor Bauer. Think about that. I mean, think about, now, does the off-the-field thing happen? Because it was an L.A. thing, if he was in New York. I mean, the behavior is the behavior. The guy is the guy. That could have been a disaster, PR-wise, especially on top of the issues he had with Porter and some of the, you know, challenges that came with bad front office behavior. You know, Cohen didn't need that. And Cohen has been, and this is where this is critically important, how Stearns performs and how he's treated is going to go a long way as to whether or not he can keep executives. Remember how George used to run through executives, run through managers. Go and look at a Wikipedia page. Look at the Yankee GMs and managers leading up to Torrey. Now, Torrey stabilized it. Cashman stabilized it. Girardi came in, it's been stable. Boone, I mean, they've been very fortunate. And a lot of that has to do with Cashman winning the battle with Tampa and George, because George was starting to amp up after 2000, 2001. He was starting to amp up. And they were starting to go into a bad place. And Cashman won that war. Now, George also was getting older, he was getting sick. And Hal has come in and been, hey, this is, run this thing your way. And I think everybody has this perception that Stearns is a small market guy. I think Stearns is very aware that he can't run the Mets like the Milwaukee Brewers. What you see in Milwaukee, what you see last night, players up and down the lineup, Andrew Vaughn, Rhys Hoskins, Jake Bowers, Joey Ortiz, you know, guys like this, Sal Frelick. I mean, good players. I mean, but you look up and down. I mean, I know Christian Yelich was a star and he's declined because of back issues. And I should say he's still very good, but he's not the player he was when they got him. I shouldn't say he's declined. That's unfair. You know, you have an offseason where you build a component-driven offense with a balance of run prevention and defense. That 100% will work to win ball games, but it better work. And to me, this is where Stearns is in a bad spot, because he's got a 5-year deal, so he's going to get paid nonetheless. But if I'm Cohen, you got to let him cook. Am I going to be happy with that kind of risk in a league where it's hard to win, even with expanded wild card. You are a team that's been through a lot as an organization over the last decade. The Yankees are vulnerable, but they're still there. And you have a chance to set a standard, at least for the next 5 to 10 years, where the Mets start to... I'm not saying they're going to be the Yankees. It's going to be, you know, you don't just overtake that history. But there are young, impressionable baseball fans that could potentially be Mets fans and lock in a new generation of New York baseball in a way that George did in 1996. George leveraged 1996 fabulously. I saw the turn. I was alive. I was a young man in college when, growing up, it was a Mets town. And in 1995, freshman year of St. John's, when they made that wild card run, the Yankees, and they captured the city, and then what happened the following year, it switched quick. And it took the Mets a couple of years with Bobby Valentine to get back in the mix, and they've been battling ever since. And they've made some strides since then, and they've come in to the table, but they've never really done anything more than hang in the room for a little bit, and then they disappear. So, you know, if Cohen wants to be the consistent or East Coast Dodgers, he's got to let this guy cook. He's got to let this guy do his thing. He can't listen to the media or the fans who are going to want to fire and change people every time they don't get their way. Nobody's going to want to work here. And I think the league is really looking to see what kind of Owen Koner is this offseason. Is he going to go out and just sign anybody and everybody to get the big headlines to wipe away and Febreze away the stench of a really disappointing end of the year? Is he going to step back and maybe spend big money, but spend it in a way that makes sense? How do they balance out incorporating their young players, the ones they keep, with signing free agents that potentially, and Pete Alonso might be one of them, may have some contracts at the end that don't necessarily look that great? I mean, I've been as much careful here because I see how bad contracts can be. And I was like, hey, if the Mets are going to sign B minus, C plus, B free agents for A money and get B minus, C plus performance, well, don't do that right now. Trust a guy like Stearns who could get that at a value equation. You started to see it gets tough. For every Reed Garrett, and I know I've been critical on Reed Garrett, but he's a decent bullpen arm picked up off the scrap heap. You got a lot of guys that you never hear from again. I mean, that's just you know, how Oscar Brazenbaum. You have a lot of guys you never hear from again. So it'll be interesting to see how Cohen behaves. I think my gut, what I hear, what I see, I think he's a guy that's going to challenge Stearns to think, hey, you know, this is still an entertainment business. And I think when we had our Twitter spaces a couple of weeks ago, one of the fans, I think it was our buddy Chip, called in and said, look, remember, the fans are looking at the trumpets for Diaz. The fans connected with Pete. Will years 5, 6, and 7 maybe not be so good, and maybe in a vacuum, in an analytics world, it doesn't make sense, sure. But majority of fans going to Citi Field, and then potentially fans in 5 or 6 years or whenever the surrounding area is built up, are going to show up to have a good day. And I don't think they want to see the value equation win, although winning is fun. They want to see big name players like what the Yankees had in the 90s with Tino Martinez and Jeter. And I hate to bring up the Yankees, but even the Mets with Piazza and Alfonso and guys like that, or Wright and Wright, like stars are what people connect the team to. Strawberry, Gooden. Rick Aguilera was a nice part of the 80s Mets. Santana was a solid shortstop. Wally Backman and Tim Tuffle were solid second basemen. Mookie Wilson was a big part of them winning a championship in 1986. Everybody talks about Doc Darrell, Keith, Gary. Gary Carter didn't have a great NLCS that year, but everyone talks about him. Very few people talk about the component guys, the bullpen and Roger McDowell going 5 scoreless innings. Like, it takes more to win a baseball team, for a baseball team to win, but you need the stars. I know a lot of you in the audience say, hey, give me the Milwaukee Brewers and what they've built and I'll be happy. And I really would be too, but I just think the risk there. That's why I hear like all these, you know, Murakami in Japan and Let Pete Walk, and I'm not in the Cohen like just go out and spend money camp. I want Stearns to cook. I think I just want Cohen to challenge him and say, hey, this is the kind of thing that we need to bring to the team, and then let him do his thing. Now, if he starts to go in and capriciously spend money over his and do like what I just talked about with Correa, I think that's bad, and I think he's heading to Steinbrenner territory, and I think this could get wacky. And believe me, the media wants this to be that. They want this to be Cohen with all this money that can't have success. It's a great story for them. This is what they've been dying for. And believe me, there's 29 other owners that want the same thing. They want spending to fail, because if spending fails, it justifies them not spending. It justifies them putting controls in the system and tell the players, I can't do this. We know and the Mets don't even win. If they don't spend $340 million this year, they don't even win 83 games. That's how deficient they are. And here's the thing, and I keep saying it before we take a break and we get into this Alonso stuff. Here's the thing. Year two of Stearns. He's taken over an organization that's been turned over three or four, maybe five times before he came in. And you guys just wanted to wave a magic wand and win a World Series and have a pipeline of players. He's had two drafts under his belt. Now you could start to evaluate how this thing is looking. But I firmly believe you can't truly get a good picture of Stearns until this contract is over. And my fear is if things don't go exactly perfect over the next couple of years, that they're going to pull the plug on the guy who's a perfect fit to run this team. Everything you want, background in baseball, mindset, demeanor, Mets fan growing up. I mean, what better story if he brings this home? He brings home the first World Series since 1986 after all those who have tried before him. All Cohen has to do is support him financially, push him a little bit, to remind him maybe of what New York is all about. Maybe use his and his wife's lifestyle and connections and mindset to put free agents over the top, because that is a big part of it. I think it worked with Soto. But let him cook. But remember, just say, hey, I'm going to let you cook, man. But remember, getting component-driven first baseman, the old Kareem Garcia and Shane Spencer could equal to Vladimir Guerrero shtick that we heard back 20 years ago. That usually doesn't add up. It doesn't even add up in Strat-O-Matic baseball. And in New York, they like stars. And if we could incorporate stars responsibly, stars that make sense, and I'm not so sure Kyle Schwarber is one of those, then let's do it. So I think that's something that we have to look for. I think we're at a crossroads here with Cohen after year five. I think this is a critically important offseason for Stearns, because he's on the clock in the media's world. Whether he is with Cohen is a different thing. And I think he has a truly complex offseason in front of him, because he's trying to merge old, new, current, and make the right mix and build it where it's sustainable, and where he potentially has flexibility in a baseball world that could change drastically with the rules after this season. So, all right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, 7 years for Pete Alonso, everybody's freaking out. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the offense. How can they? And we're all going to be about the offense, because Pete's the story of the show today. We'll get to the pitching. Probably next week we'll start talking about the pitching, but everybody's talking about the offense. Everybody now, that's not a good fit, because they only look for defensive players now. That's all I see on social media and the media. The Mets need to improve their defense. Well, yes, calm down. You can't win 0-1. There's defense at certain positions that's important. There's defense at other positions that aren't as important. Let's take a quick break. We'll talk about more right after this. All right, we're back. So everybody's freaking out about the word that came down last night. Pete Alonso wants a 7-year deal. And I saw everybody say, well, that's it. Goodbye. Can't do that. And here's the thing about Pete Alonso. I'm going to unpack this, because people have called me out, and rightfully so, saying, hey, you know, a year ago you were saying, hey, this is a guy that's trending like Richie Sexson. And I've been talking about for years about how right-handed hitters go downhill quick. And I'll remind you and I'll give you some examples of big right-handed hitters. You know, not, you know, randos, some that play first base that some don't, that, you know, where their production went off. Now, some of these guys went from Hall of Fame to just very good, which is still a nice landing spot, but I guess the point is, if you're very good, the landing spot is a lot worse. So when I talk about a Miguel Cabrera or Jeff Bagwell, the drop-off is different than when you talk about Paul Konerko, Derek Lee, guys like that. So let me put in perspective Pete Alonso, and let me put in perspective where the Mets are at. The thing that's not talked about a lot about the Mets is they're very left-handed. And at times over the last few years, they've struggled against left-handed pitching, including Alonso actually struggled against left-handed pitching this year. And with Alonso potentially walking out the door and the big free agents that are available, the Bellingers, the Kyle Tuckers, the Schwarbers, you want to throw Josh Naylor in there because he's a first base, they're all left-handed. They're all left-handed. And I don't see a world that going into spring training, relying on Vientos and Alvarez, and if he's still around, he's not part of a deal for a pitcher, Jet Williams. Those are not the kind of right-handed bats you want to rely on. You don't want to have component-driven bats, right-handed bats. Let's say they reunite with Harrison Bader. Just throwing that out there. It would be nice. It would be something. I don't know if Tyrone Taylor's bat will ever be like Bader, but it would be nice. I think they still feel and they still have control that Taylor could be Bader. I think that was their bet last year. We'll see. I don't know what Taylor, you know, can do at this point. We've seen a lot of him where his bat is streaky, and even when it's good, it's below, well below sometimes league average. So you don't have right-handed options internally. Carson Benj is a left-handed hitter. You don't have that right now. You're relying on young players that are part of that. We don't know necessarily where they're going to land. Great 24 for Vientos. Not so great 25. Streaky 25. Alvarez, everybody knows what that's all about. And he plays a position that's demanding, which means he's going to be out of the lineup. He's probably going to miss 30, 35 games a year. Hopefully he stays healthier. But even if he stays healthy, and it depends on what they do with the DH spot, when you play that position, even DHing, you kind of need a blow. You need a blow. So the Mets need right-handed a bat. Over the last 20 years, and there are players on this list that have long been retired. Over the last 20 years, you go to Baseball Reference and you look at run creation for first baseman. Here's the list of the top five. Paul Goldschmidt, still playing. Jose Abreu, not really a factor anymore. Paul Konerko, Derek Lee, and then Pete Alonso. Derek Lee hasn't played in 15 years. Paul Konerko, longer than that. Jose Abreu has declined the last couple of years. And Goldschmidt has not been the same player since he had that big 2022 season. We've talked about it, and anybody who subscribed to Beyond the Mic knows it's been part of the premium content. Last year, there was only two other right-handed batters in the league that were better at run creation than Alonso: Aaron Judge and George Springer. And Springer was a guy the Mets were looking at a few years ago who has had down years and had kind of a renaissance year. So maybe he's an anomaly, but Vlad Guerrero Jr. is right there. Right there. So, you know, forget the fact he has more RBIs than even Aaron Judge. He's third in home runs behind Schwarber and Judge. Like, every single metric from an offensive run creation, and in the middle of that lineup, a lineup that had Alonso and Soto that still struggled, and we talked about this last week, struggled because of the inconsistencies of the component slash young kids that didn't elevate themselves to be part of a core. They still struggled at times to score. And if you take away August, where they went bananas and maybe essentially rose to where they should be, it was a statistical correction maybe. You take Pete Alonso out of that lineup, I'm sorry. I don't care what glove you bring in and how much gold it has, you're going to struggle to score. And I don't see a scenario where the Mets this offseason all of a sudden become the 95 Braves in pitching overnight. I think there's potential. I think they certainly will be better in pitching. I think that they'll be able to do that. So this idea that we're only going to talk about good gloves, that's not the case. Here's where you need a good glove. Short, you have one. You're going to have to live or die with him. He's you know, the goofy errors because of whatever reason, the brain fart errors, those are, I'm not going to make assessments on him on that. I don't know what McNeil's a guy that seems to be possibly traded. Sometimes guys that are like on that kind of plane don't get traded. Not a bad glove at second base, by the way. Not Acuna, but not a bad glove. You actually have a great glove in center field, just can't hit. And you're okay behind the plate. Third, first, corners, not critical positions. Now, you don't want clunkers like Kyle Schwarber or Mark Vientos there, but you could survive. Now, Nimmo, I think his range is fine, and it's getting a little bit damaged because of his health. Maybe he's a guy that you need to think about moving to a DH spot. And that's the other thing I think you're going to have to think about, and that's why I'm kind of against Schwarber. That DH spot is going to have to potentially be somewhat of a open spot to put your Alvarez in there, maybe your Pete. I know he doesn't want a DH. If he comes back, give him a blow here and there. Nimmo, you have to rotate it. Unless you have David Ortiz, a Hall of Famer, rotate it out. And I'm not sure that Schwarber, the trade-off there, makes sense. It'll be a great headline for December. I'm not so sure it'll make sense in June at that point. So at this point, you have questions in center. You have questions at second. You potentially have a solution at third in Beatty. But where Pete goes, Beatty might be a sacrificial lamb. And there's questions, obviously, on the DH spot that comes with all of this because you're not so sure what's going to happen. You cannot allow money at this point in 2030 or 31, if you build the contract responsibly, deter you from walking away from a guy that showed this past off season that he can take a challenge, embrace it, and improve. The Pete Alonso that we saw this past year at age 30, and I don't care what analytics says, I don't care what you remember from 2019, his rookie year, where the ball was juiced and he probably had another 5 to 8 home runs because of the ball just taking off instead of doubles. I mean, I think the difference between this year and 2019 is he hit 11 more doubles instead of 11 more home runs. And probably some of those balls go out with the ball in 2019. This is a guy that showed you that he can embrace adversity, channel it, and then thrive. I have no doubt. Now, there's going to be physical limitations. I understand. I've gotten the emails about his body and his glove. If this guy, if anything I know about this guy, he worked on his swing. Here he is, age 29, going to 30, worked on his swing this offseason, became a better average hitter, drove in as many runs as he usually does. His on-base percentage was more along where he was in his early prime. I know he'll work on his defense. Throws to first, that might be the yips. He'll work on that mechanically. Is he ever going to be great on ground balls and bunts? He could probably work on the bunts and the throws. The range, I mean, really, is that really hurting him all that much? You want Doug Minkiewicz at first base who doesn't hit? You want to maybe see what you can do as a defensive replacement? I know that was something that Dom Smith was back when he was here. You don't really have that many roster spots because of the pitching to have defensive replacements for every clunker. I know that first base, you know, there's been talk about maybe Soto at some point going there. I don't know how serious that is. That'd be interesting. I mean, maybe that is something that eventually, if Pete leaves, will become more of a discussion sooner rather than later. I don't know. You can't let this guy walk. You let this guy walk, you've got serious deficiency on offense. So you go from having an offense that you can improve by tweaking certain positions and tweaking the defense, and focusing on the pitching, to now having a huge hole on the offensive side that, oh, well, they could fix that, Mike. Well, let's look at how easy that is. You want to talk about Bregman? Okay, Alex Bregman is a Gold Glove third baseman who just a year ago, some people were concerned, and that's why he signed a short-term deal, about his ability to continue performing because of his hard hit rate, which, by the way, still isn't great. While Pete Alonso is having historically good hard hit rates, Bregman is not. Now, that doesn't mean he can't be a successful hitter, and he's certainly a good glove. But after all you saw from Brett Beatty and the improvement on defense, and he did improve offensively, and I think not having him that last weekend in Miami hurt the Mets, why would you just walk away from him? And I've been as critical as the next guy on Beatty, but he's shown me a lot. To me, you're going to have homegrown, cost-controlled players. Right now, out of the four guys, Mauricio, Alvarez, Beatty, Vientos, Beatty and Alvarez, I feel, and this is a big turn for me because I've been critical, I feel they've been through the gauntlet. They've shown me that they can potentially be keepers. I'm not saying they're going to be all-stars, and they're going to do stuff that annoys me. But I think they're solutions, and they're cost-controlled solutions. Mauricio Vientos, I'm not so sure about. I think Vientos doesn't provide the value that you need outside of hitting, and he has, and that's a DH. That's a right-handed Schwarber. And Mauricio, I don't know if he... I mean, he's got a good glove, and his metrics really stand out well among the top third basemen. Just go to Baseball Savant. But I'm not so sure he knows how to play the game. And I think he's a toolsy guy that's always going to annoy you because he's not going to bring it all together. But it's soon on that. And they're going to need to trade some guys because they're going to need pitching. So he might be one of the casualties here. So if Bregman to me is not Pete Alonso. He's not and that means Beatty's out the door, personally. Because Beatty doesn't profile defensively at second base, and even at like a Nimmo. Okay. Who are your right-handed options? Eugenio Suarez, defensively not. I mean, I hear mixed reviews on the defense at third. It seems like Arizona survived with him. Again, I could survive as long as he's not Vientos-like with less defense at third. Would you be able to trade? You know, Byron Buxton doesn't want to leave Minnesota. He'd be perfect in center field. Health concerns, he'd be a perfect. If you want to tell me, hey, Pete leaves, you want to kill two birds with one stone, you could figure out a way to get Byron Buxton to New York and you're convinced he's healthy. He's a righty bat. He's got speed. He's got defense. Yeah, there's a guy that I could talk about. It's not real. What are the Cardinals looking to do? Is Wilson Contreras, who now is not a catcher, is a first baseman, and could be one of those late career guys that provide you good, like Salvador Perez, good performance and defense at first from a righty bat. And guess what? I know he didn't catch last year, but having the option as an emergency, and he's got a good arm, in case, you know, have, it's almost like having a third catcher on the roster, not a bad option. And then look, names like Yandy Diaz and Brandon Lau, who are both in Tampa, who is in flux and with, you know, player options, cost control player options, would you be able to trade for them? Diaz, to me, is not really a good first baseman. He's more of a DH now. I know Lau plays a little bit first base. Both those guys are not good gloves. Lau's lefty. So, you know, where do you get your right-handed bat from? Now, if you're telling me now what a Milwaukee Brewers type move is, I mean, and Contreras is making $18 million per, and by the way, he's in his late prime. You get, you know, Contreras at first to replace Pete. You know, maybe you go out and you sign, you know, Tucker or Bellinger. You know, do you want to bring Schwarber in here to make up for the power that you lose with Pete and throw him at DH? The thing is this. Okay, you want to say Josh Naylor's a good Pete replacement at first? He's not a bad Pete replacement at first. Again, he's not right-handed. You can't have an all lefty lineup. You will be easily pitched to. And then what are you going to go out? Get component guys to sub in against a tough righty? It is amazing how some of the big hitters in this league are all lefty. It's kind of something that I should look at a little bit deeper. Now, I know what you're saying, Mike. 7 years? I don't know if you need to get 7 years. I think you need to do six. I think you got to work with Pete a little bit. Say, hey, Pete, you know, we just gave you $30 million here for the first year. This is kind of year one of the 7 years. 6 years, you know, 175, 180, really comes out to 7-2-10, which is what, if he got that last offseason, he would have signed on the dotted line. Now, I know you're saying age 34, 35, 36. Okay, let's take a quick look. Let's take a quick look. Jose Abreu fell off the cliff at age 35. Konerko started to fall off the cliff at age 34, 31. Derek Lee, age 32. I get it. You want to go to some elite hitters? Miguel Cabrera, age 33. Albert Pujols, age 33. Paul Goldschmidt, age 35. He's still pretty good, but he's a component player now. Mike Trout, injuries killed him, age 31. Andrew McCutchen, age 29. It was the demarcation line. Matt Holliday, age 33. Nelson Cruz, actually last, age 39. So there is anomalies. That's an anomaly. And look, Pete's going to have to DH eventually. He knows that. I think he doesn't want to give that up until... But you know what that is? The top right-handed run creators the last 20 years. Number one, Miguel Cabrera, Hall of Famer. Number two, Albert Pujols, Hall of Famer. Number three, Paul Goldschmidt, not sure he's a Hall of Famer, very good player. Number four, Mike Trout, probably be a Hall of Famer. He's going to be a sports Greek tragedy. Andrew McCutchen, number five. You want to know the kick in the you-know-what is number 20 is David Wright. So this is not easy at all. My plan, what I like to see, you get this Pete thing, you know, hopefully done quick. And I know, and, you know, I usually do on the way out some of the comments and mailbag. I know our friend over at the premium newsletter, the Substack, Justin, you know, what's his market? I think that's a big question. I think Boris now, without the draft pick and with... I just gave you numbers about Pete. I didn't even talk about the fact that he plays every day. I talked about effort and the ability to improve, leadership and energy. He plays 162 games. I always worry about him getting bonked in the hand, but, you know, some guys have luck. Some guys have, you know, good fortune. And then you have the offensive prowess from the right side. I mean, if I'm looking that up here on a Sunday morning, drinking my cup of coffee, talking to you, what do you think Boris in his binder is doing? A lot more. So, you know, our friend Justin brings up the Yankees. Possibility. I could see them if Bellinger walks. What better way to stick it to the Mets for Soto to bring Pete in, team him up with Judge? Although they usually like left-handed batters. You know, they may think Pete, I mean, Pete doesn't solve their defensive problems, but he certainly is an offensive upgrade in some ways. If, you know, Grisham leaving, Bellinger leaving, but the word is they don't want to spend at that level. Boston, yeah, maybe, I could see. I mean, Bregman leaves, maybe they put, he goes over there. I mean, Pete on the Green Monster plate, he'll be hitting balls off that monster. He better lose a few pounds to get to second base because those home runs will become singles pretty quick. Seattle, okay, maybe if they decide to spend money, you know, that's a possibility at that point. You just don't know what goes on out there. You know, look, right now they're focused on winning a World Series, and you know, they've got you know, Josh Naylor out there. So I it's a good guess, Justin, but I don't know. Texas. Not sure what's going on out there. I know they signed DeGrom. What's the, you know, the cut cost there? Philly is one to watch. I heard last year that they were interested. Harper plays first. Can Harper, after a couple of years removed from TJ surgery, play the outfield? Schwarber leaves. The DH spot opens. So maybe that's an option for Harper. I would keep an eye on Philly. DC, I don't think the owner's like he used to be spending money. I just don't see it at that point. And if, you know, I'll look at their roster real quick. I mean, they have Nathan Lau at first base. You know, obviously that's, you know, Pete's a big upgrade. Adding him to the lineup, are they going to do what they did with Jason Worth a few years back when they were trying to merge? I don't know. And there's some turnover over there in Washington too. Cincinnati, not sure they're going to spend money. The Cubs, I think that ship sailed. And I think they're okay with the team they have now. And you know, Colorado, he ain't spending money. Trust me, I know that for a fact. Colorado's not spending money. Arizona, again, another team that I there's so much uncertainty about spend. Now, all Boris has to do is find one, whether it be San Francisco, you know, the Yankees, Philly, and then the Mets have themselves a problem. I'm on the Mets, and I would talk more about Diaz in another time. Just go to him like, hey, we want you here. Here's what we could do. And don't insult them. Know your market. Now, last year they had leverage, and they also had concerns and questions. Pete has proven that. I mean, here's a guy that went into a meeting with David Stearns in February and said, hey, I'm going to hit 500 home runs. I mean, he thinks he's going to Hall of Fame. Pete's crazy like that. You know, I think it was like many years ago he talked about that letter he wrote in high school, college about putting his goals on paper and basically achieving all of them. I mean, that's the kind of guy you're dealing with. And he'll put the work in. That is not common. Do not just use numbers and historical age at this point. He's proven himself time and time again. And I am a converter. I'm converted on this. I was not talking like this a year ago. I understand that. Sometimes you have to let players prove themselves. And he did. And then you look at the team. Okay, so Pete leaves. We brought up Byron Buxton. We brought up a Yandy Diaz or trading for Wilson Contreras if Cardinals are splitting payroll or siphoning payroll. I don't know what Heim Bloom is going to do over there. Eugenio Suarez is okay. I mean, you're going to DH him. You want to put him at third? You know, probably not. He's probably going to be DHing more. Does he want to? Then the other option is, okay, could you trade a star that's either has to be traded because he's unhappy, not that the baseball's like the NBA with the stars pushing themselves out, or from a financial standpoint, you have Brett Rooker that we've heard in the past, you have Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, Fernando Tatis Jr. is an interesting name, defensively, right-handed bat, could play multiple positions, including shortstop. I know he's more of an outfielder now. That's going to cost you. I just think signing Pete solves your problems. You can still look at those things, but you become much more desperate. I mean, I like Cody Bellinger. I don't know if the Mets like him as much. I know his numbers at Yankee Stadium maybe inflated his overall numbers. I think he's versatile. I think he brings a glove. I think the challenges is you have Nimmo, who's pretty untradeable, and I think Nimmo is underrated. Later in his career, he gives you late career Paul O'Neill and Tito Martinez and his leadership in the clubhouse. I think that that's worth it. I mean, is Colorado willing to, you know, if the Mets eat money, take Nimmo there as a gate attraction, local guy? Yeah, maybe. Maybe. But I don't see that. I mean, you got to remember, I think Pete's also staring down the barrel of uncertainty because of the lockout. I don't think he's going to have a ton of suitors. I think this winter the Mets could have things, they could have their cake and eat it too. But to just dismiss and say, give him a 3-year deal. Look, the guy wants security. The guy wants to know where he's going to be pretty much for the rest of his career. After the age 35, 36, 37, he'll decide whether he wants to play anymore. We'll see where he's at. He doesn't want to go through this again. This is it. I don't blame him. Kyle Tucker is a great defensive player, great hitter. Injured a lot. Cody Bellinger, I was against. I know some people were interested in him. Another guy that's evolved, and you got to give the Boris guys credit. They evolve. Bellinger was becoming a bad hitting defensive guy. You know, almost like a utility guy. I mean, he went through this period where after he almost won the MVP in 2019, he fell off a complete cliff. Kyle Schwarber, I know you guys love the home runs, but. And I'm going to say, I'm more open to him than I was 4 years ago. But again, another postseason where he's pitchable. He's a guy, I think, that gets you to the postseason. I think he hits a lot of home runs. I think a tough lefty could get him out. I think good pitching could get him out. And he's a 3 true outcome guy. And it's okay to have that. But when you need that DH spot, and if he was right-handed, maybe my attitude would be different. I know he hit more home runs than Pete. But I think Pete's a better player. Bo Bichette, he's a shortstop. That's another guy on the free agent market. Gleyber Torres, come on. That's going in another direction. So to me, you have a really tough time. The only way you're going to improve the defense is if you sign Pete to solidify the offense. You potentially see what you could do in center field. You know, but even the guys like Duran of the Red Sox, who might be available by trade, most players are not available by trade. You're going to have to trade for a right-handed bat. And if you don't have Pete in that lineup, you know, what kind of leverage do you have? Now, 2 years from now, maybe they develop some more bats there. I think the part that really makes this harder is that you don't know what you're going to get from Vientos and Alvarez. If Vientos, and I don't want to hear about Vientos at first base. The guy just doesn't have defensive instincts. 1 minute, you know, and then you have this guy from Japan. He's lefty, first off. He's a DH. I mean, I'm open to, you know, maybe a DH situation. But this is, you know, this is a critical offseason. You know, 2 years ago, maybe it'd be more acceptable. This is a critical offseason. I will tell you this. If the Mets do not sign Pete Alonso, I would seriously look for them to trade for Yandy Diaz, which is probably more of a DH, but more that Wilson Contreras option is intriguing to me. And you would get like 3 years out of him. You have to hope he ages well. These guys have metrics that have him age well. You just heard all those ages. Contreras is past the ages of the witching hour. Other than Nelson Cruz and maybe like a little bit of Paul Goldschmidt. So you're going to have to then strike for shoot for the moon with a Tatis or a Rooker. Ain't going to be easy to make those kind of trades. Ain't going to be easy. And that doesn't include the fact that maybe, and I know this, that you're going to want to spend a good chunk of this offseason seeing is a Joe Ryan available, is a George Kirby, you know, a pitcher that becomes, or, you know, teams that are in mid-markets, are some of their young aces getting expensive? Would they trade them if they have a surplus or they can't afford them? And forget about Skeens and Scuba. Like, those are pipe dreams. You check in on that. Is there an option? And I'm guessing with Skeens, it's going to be home run or nothing. Like, blow me away. With Scuba, maybe they'll listen, but they also might say, hey, let's go for it again. We weren't that far off from making a championship series. Why? You know, maybe, you know, I could, even at the deadline, you might be able to get something. I don't know. You know, I don't know what the Tigers situation, like, there's so much uncertainty right now to not take re-signing Pete seriously because of some report about a 7-year deal. You could work through that. What, you think he's, if the Mets offer him 6 years, 180, you think he's going to turn that down? I mean, he's going to want to see what's out there. What if someone goes crazy? What if San Francisco goes crazy and offers him an 8-year deal? I mean, that's just good business. But here's the thing, like, stop with the whole, like, just looking at defensive players. You need offense and you need defense in key positions. I think Beatty at third is fine. Lindor at short is fine. To a certain degree, McNeil at second is fine. Your issue is center field right now. And you want to upgrade, you know, and maybe you want to talk about leaving the DH spot open to get a better defensive, versatile player in the corner and put Nimmo at the DH. That's a Duran. That's a Tatis. I mean, even Brent Rooker, you know, that's more of a DH. I mean, you take it, you know, the guy's 30 years old. He plays the outfield, but it's more of a DH. More of an on-base guy. And, you know, let me see real quick because, you know, I'm talking about this guy, and I know he was good even before Sacramento. But he played in that minor league park. And he was a lot better in that minor league park than he was on the road. Now, sometimes when you play in those environments, it plays games with you. But so I'm not even sure he's as good of an option as we think. Definitely crushes left-handed pitching, which the Mets could use for sure. So, you know, there's that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to wrap up, take some comments from the fans, and wrap up, and we'll be back with more right after this. All right, we're back. Final thoughts. Talking Mets podcast here. Get some mailbag. Wrap up here on this Sunday while we start to prepare over the next couple of weeks for what will be a very interesting hot stove. Usually gets kicked off at the GM meetings where, historically, David Stearns, when he spoke to the press, he's given you enough crumbs to outline the offseason plan. We'll see if that's the case this critical offseason. You know, a couple of names, well, one name I didn't mention that I thought about during the break. Marcell Ozuna, I know some people bring him up. He's already past the witching hour of the age 32, 33. He showed some decline this year. He's only a DH. I think the off-the-field stuff is just such a problem. I think that was when I thought, and I would have been correct, I thought the Mets should have brought in Chapman with Diaz. And I know there was reports they had tried, but of course, Chapman probably wanted more of an opportunity to potentially close. With Diaz there, you're not going to close. The off-the-field stuff just becomes too much to overcome. So I can't see that. And it's not like he's an in-prime star where you could justify it and say, hey, look, he's made his penance. It's a combustible thing already. He's on the back end of his career. And, good on base guy, good righty bat. When he was on the last couple of years, the Braves are really tough. After 2022, when he got into that lineup became that much longer, that much tougher when he found his groove. But I don't think that that's an option. And if that is a right-handed bat, that's for sure. So our friend Steve sends me an email basically saying that, Alonso signing a 7-year deal would be the worst contract in baseball. And I know he quotes WAR and, talks about him not being better as he ages. Steve, I just outlined on a whole show where I don't think defense at first is as important. I'm not saying you want to Dick Stewart there. And if you don't know who Dick Stewart is, look him up. Pittsburgh Pirate from the 60s. If there was a DH back then, Dick Stewart was a DH. I think his offense, especially from the right-handed side, is where I'm looking at this. You have to look at this differently. You have to look at what the Mets are. You have to look at what's available. You have to look at what's in the pipeline. If you let Alonso walk, you are now faced with figuring out the right side of your lineup. And it's a problem. If you had in prime JD Martinez, maybe you at DH, maybe that's different. You don't. You're a very lefty lineup. And I know that most of the pitchers are righty, but every game there's a lefty that could come in and potentially cause you a problem. You are riddled to have matchup problems. So I don't think a 7-year deal is where it needs to go. And there's going to be a point where the Mets, the guy's not going to accept less than 30 AAV. I just don't see it. And if he does, it's going to be stretched over many more years. There's a number that he wants. There's a number that Boris wants. Now, whether they stretch it out or they go tighter, and tighter is 5 or 6 years. I just don't think this guy wants to go through this again. Anybody talking about 3-year contract, opt-outs, Pete's not doing that. He's not doing that. I don't think he'll have a big market, but he'll have a market. There'll be somebody that when he goes to free agency will be a thorn in the Mets side. So I understand what you're saying, Steve. You got to look at this outside of war value. You got to look at where the Mets are and the righty bat. And I think the more that you do research on Pete, and it's not high-level research. You just go to Baseball Reference. You go to Fangraphs. You go to Savant. Guy's hitting the ball hard. The guy's made improvements. You know the intangibles. You've seen him. You've been watching the Mets probably since he came up. And, there's not that much better options. And even when you look at the left-handed options, Schwarber, Tucker, Bellinger, that are available without a trade, all of them have their issues too. Tucker's never healthy. So, you got to be careful here. Our buddy Jeff Cohen. Keeping Alonso and Diaz is staying put and not improving. Smart pitching decisions need to be made. Mike, should we assume that a new pitching coach be hired prior to any changes to the pitching staff? Jeff, I think Eric Yeagers is running things. I think Driveline is running things. I've heard watch for Desi Drusil as a possible pitching coach. I guarantee the Mets have already done some due diligence and are preparing their coaching staff. This is not going to be like Brody Van Wagenen, who did this big search, or the Wilpons, who made it seem, because the Wilpons had to prove that they were competent. This is not going to be done through the media. This organization doesn't leak anymore. You're going to find out some things, I think, that the Mets are out there looking for a pitching coach, unless the pitching coach's agent leaks. And I'll tell you what, I'd be surprised if the Mets said, hey, we don't want you talking to the press. You're going to find out about these guys. And these guys are going to have to fit into this organization template, not the other way around. Period. End of story. Joe Lopez. Cohen has to keep Alonso. He's one of the best offensive first basemen. His defense not so good, but first base is an offensive position. Thank you, Joe. You're talking sense. He can become a DH. I think the biggest mistake that Cohen made was taking Soto. For that kind of money, he could have invested in better pitching. Joe, you could have it both, man. I don't think that Soto is going to be, he's a generational hitter. You saw that once he got going. You're not in a position anymore where it's one or the other. I think that not having a pipeline of developed pitchers hurt them, and now you're starting to see that come to fruition. And, you know, the Snells and the Corbin Burns, and I know Snell's pitched well in the postseason. Those are guys that, you know, I think Stearns looked at Shamanai and say, I got a better shot of being very good with Shamanai at his price versus breaking the bank for Snell, which, by the way, Snell didn't want to play on the East Coast. So I don't think there was many pitching free agent options as people thought last year. Our buddy Red Solo Traveler. Yes, keeping Diaz and Alonso are important, but starting pitching needs major improvement. And overall, without strong starting pitching, the bullpen and hitters get taxed and gassed and lose their edge. Don't break up the core if you don't have to. But if push comes to shove, fans are going to have to deal with even some of their favorites getting traded to make the team better. I agree with you, Red Solo Traveler. Thank you again for being a loyal contributor to the chat room. Which, by the way, if you're not in the chat room, doesn't cost you to sign up. Free subscriber to Beyond the Mic, and you can get the chat. You know, just behave yourself. Be nice. You know, don't just go in there and use it as negative Mets therapy if you can. I think Jeff McNeil's that guy, and I like Jeff McNeil, and I've been so resistant to them trading him. I think when you talk about one of their favorites getting traded, Jeff McNeil is that guy because I like him. Maybe Mark Vientos falls into that, or Ronnie Mauricio. Those are not my favorites. I think Vientos is going to be one that is a risk because if he goes out and it becomes Eugenio Suarez somewhere else, you're going to say that could have been the power they needed. You know, he's not a young guy, and I just saw a lot of red flags with him this season, especially on breaking pitches and good pitching. I did not feel confident when there was a good pitcher up there, an elite bullpen arm, that he was able to get through that. And I know everybody brings up the postseason and 2024. The league figures you out. Video gets around. And he also talked about, and look, if you think if it's an Eric Chavez thing, and I know everybody's been talking about Chavez because he's been making his media rounds, maybe. I still think a guy like Vientos, there were reasons why it took him so long to get to the big leagues and how he had to basically force himself into the conversation. Remember, Vientos didn't come out of nowhere. He was up in 2022 late in the year. He was up in 2023. You know, 2024 was kind of like his last stand. You know, Joe A, I hope they don't waste a lot of time looking for replacements for Alonso and Diaz. I hope they can re-sign them and focus the majority of the offseason on landing a number one starter and signing bullpen arms. If they get this pitching to the top third of the league, they're going to be fine. Joe, I mean, I think you see this with essentially all the teams that are in the postseason. They have very strong pitching, strong bullpen. And I agree. I think Diaz, and he's complicated too because he could go bad. If you're going to tell me a guy, Alonso or Diaz, that the back end of the contract's going to look worse, I actually think Diaz might look worse if they extend them out. I'm not so sure he's going to opt out. I think they're going to work something out. I think Diaz is looking around, looking at his age. He's got one more shot. He sees Tanner Scott. I mean, there's a market for him. I don't know how many teams want to pay $18 to $20 million a year for a closer, even as good as Diaz. There is some red flags with Diaz as a two-pitch pitcher. He finally went through the gauntlet. I mean, he's gone through the gauntlet here in New York a couple of times. And I think Diaz is a guy that wants to be comfortable, and I think the Mets have made him and his family very comfortable. And I think that that's important. Very important. So that's some of the stuff that we got from the chat room, we got from the email. As always, Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. I go through the newsletter with comments. I go through the chat room thread with comments. I go through the email with comments. I try to pick some of the best. I know that some of you are probably taking a little bit of a blow away from baseball, but we're in full force, and I'm really excited about the new partnership with Believe. I want to thank them for supporting the show. If you want to go and get anything Talking Mets, you go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You've got the archive content if you want to look at some of our old prospect lists. You got the link to subscribe to the newsletter for premium content. Or if you want to just do a free subscription, that's fine. You can take part in the chat. There's a link there too. All the episodes get updated over at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. If you want that, you got Apple, you got Spotify. And guess what? With the change to the Believe Network, nothing changes for you. All your RSS feeds and links still work. Nothing changes. We made this seamless as possible. Of course, for those that don't want to get involved in premium content, you will get ads on your show, but you know they're not going to be that intrusive, I think. Of course, those that are premium subscribers, you get the show quick. It goes out on Substack, and it's commercial-free. So there's some benefits there, and also premium content. Some things to tease this week that I'm thinking about this week, and who knows what the news brings up. We're going to look at Juan Soto batting leadoff over at the newsletter. Does that make sense? Eric Chavez brought that up. We might start looking at the arbitration-eligible players and you know how that plays out. I know the Arizona Fall League's in play. I want to take a look at some Mets because if you look at Arizona Fall League players, they typically are players that the Mets think, I'm not saying they're stars, that could be solutions. So let's see who the Mets are looking at in the AFL, and it might give us an indication of who could become a piece on the 2026 team. So some things I'm thinking about, of course, you know this thing is fluid. I say I'm going to do this, and then all of a sudden news comes out and we do that. And at Beyond the Mic, you might get video, you might get audio. You might get written. I haven't done audio. I haven't done video in a while. Maybe we'll do something like that fun. I don't know if you guys, I got a nice new on-air sign right behind me. So you see all the retired numbers, which I'm trying to update them with Doc and Daryl and Wright, because where I got my retired numbers, the company that did it doesn't exist anymore. I've been trying to get those. So I got to add to my retired numbers behind me. And then you have the on-air sign. So if you like seeing the man cave, so to speak, you know, maybe I'll do an audio so you guys can see the man cave, if you really care. I mean, I don't know if you care. It doesn't really matter either way. So anyway, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this latest edition of the Talking Mets Podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silvat, talkingmetspodcast.com, no G, Mike Silvat, talkingmetspodcast.com. Of course, go to TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me at Mike Silvat, TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G to interact. And I want to thank the good folks from the Believe Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll be back with another Talking Mets podcast next week. Till then, take care, everybody.